All right, guys, it is Rickin, and you are on the Rickin YouTube channel. I am live remote today. I'm actually on a family vacation. That's why I'm kind of in like a beach attire, but we decided to get away this week. But the really cool thing about what we do is I run my entire wholesale operation, and I'm actually able to take the live streams on the road. So I actually enjoy doing this stuff. So I had a decision either give you guys a video or just do a live stream. And honestly, I think the live streams are just more effective. And it's a great way to connect with you guys one-on-one. So if you guys are brand new here, my name is Rickin. I've been wholesaling for 21 years. I absolutely love this business. And if you want to learn more on how to do free wholesaling, I'm going to put a link right here in the bottom, right there, freewholesaling.com. I developed it over 3 years ago with my son. It is a head-to-toe learning manual on how not only to get started in wholesaling to get your first deal, but to teach you everything about wholesaling to make your first $100,000. That's right. I said your first $100,000 because I've done it. I've taught tens of thousands of people to do it. And I actually taught my son at 16 to do it. And what I learned in the process is to simplify it. Most of us make making money way too complicated, especially in wholesaling. So if you go to freewholesaling.com, if you've never heard or seen me before, that's a great place to start because I'm going to teach you how to learn and earn all at the same time. You see, I'm not going to treat you like your teachers did at school. We're actually going to teach you how to make money and actually how to make it a real business. And you can do it within 30 days. I have people that do it all the time. We just got done with our June challenge. It was phenomenal. And so make sure you visit me there. And then also, you're going to have the comment section. Use that section to where you can connect with like-minded people. These are great people to do JVs with, people to pick their brain if they have buyers in their market. Or honestly, if you want to learn where someone's doing something really cool in one market and you're not implementing in your market, it's a great place. To be honest with you, when you work with other people's in the same skill set as you, it's pretty cool because you guys can use the energy off each other. It works really well. So use the comment sections. And if you have a question, please ask me. This is why I do these live streams. The only bad question is the one you don't ask. Use the comment questions. And if you look in the comments as well on the top, the upper top portion, you'll see one there, Rickin. There is a link there. And if you want to do a one-on-one, it is a great spot to connect with me. If you got a question, if you've never done a wholesale deal or you've done thousands of them like me, let's connect. We can work on a deal. We can work on your mindset and we can formulate a business plan if you want to work on that. But here's what we're doing today. We're talking all about the best motivated list for 2023. And what I want to share with you most importantly are the lists I'm using today in 2023 to get the best wholesale deals. Because I've been using a lot of lists over 21 years and they do ebb and flow, but you're going to see a rhyme to the list I use. Most gurus don't talk about them. They're all talking about very expensive softwares. Honestly, I'm going to keep it really simple with the list with the most motivation because that's what you need to get a really good wholesale deal. So you got two ways to connect me. When the comments ask a question, you can connect with other members on there. Also introduce us. Let us know which market you're from. Let us know what deals you're working on. And if you want to reach out and connect with someone, put your stuff out there. The worst you're going to do is make a new friend. You can always delete these people, whatever you want to do. And honestly, I love communicating with you guys in the feeds and stuff like that. And then the one-on-ones, it is a first come first serve basis. Put it in there. Guys, I am out and about, but I'm still here to communicate. So this is why I'm in my beach attire and I'm really like covered in sweat because I looked up, it's 5 o'clock, let's get it going. So let's talk about today. Let's talk about everything going on and let's talk about the right list to connect with. So what we'll do is take about 25 minutes, maybe 30 minutes, do a teaching section. Then we're going to go through, answer questions and do the lives. And as long as I have questions, I'll stay on the air. When you guys are done, I'm going to head over to the beach. So we'll figure it out. Actually, I need to get a bite to eat. I am starving. So let's jump in. And by the way, so make sure you put your comments on the right-hand side. And if you get value from this video, smash that like button. And as usual, if you like videos like this, you want to learn more about wholesaling from someone who actually wants to teach you, show you the steps to do it, make sure you hit that subscribe button. It's the only way I can provide you content that I don't provide on any other platform, only on the Rickin YouTube channel. You got to be subscribed to do that. So without further ado, let's jump into it. So basically, I'm going to talk about seven of my favorite lists in 2023. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. I was a heavy, heavy, heavy foreclosure guy when I started out. You know why? Because that's all I knew. And obviously, I've learned a lot more since then. So let's jump into it. So first and foremost, code violations. If you've never heard of code violations, it is nothing more than a city or a county, and they keep records of who takes care of their property and who doesn't. And the reason they do that is if you buy a nice house and your neighbor decides not to take care of their house, they never mow the lawn, or they won't want to run like a bar and grill out of their house, they have this thing called code violations. And it basically says if there's a violation to the city or county statutes, what's a violation? Like on average, I don't think you're allowed to keep your grass more than like 3 or 4 inches high. Yes, they will come out and measure it with a ruler. I've seen them do it before. And what happens is if the homeowner doesn't comply, either the city drives around and writes down addresses, or your neighbor's telling you, and it's a pain in the butt. So when they do that, it gets reported. You get a letter and a violation taped to your door very boldly, and you've got usually 30 days to fix it. What happens if you don't fix it in 30 days? You can get up to a $50 or $100 fine per day. Now, it doesn't just stop with grass. It has to do if you board your windows up, put up storm shutters, if you got a gaping hole in your roof, a blue tarp on your roof, if you have a missing mailbox, if you didn't pressure clean your driveway, it goes on and on. Now, you're probably thinking, why on earth would somebody let their house get this way? Well, if you've ever participated in this thing called life, stuff comes up. People pass away, people lose their jobs, people hit some stressful times. And during these times, is maybe they're taking care of a sick family member or something like that. If you've ever had that come up, the house isn't as important, or maybe they just don't have the money to fix it up. This is a great time for an investor like us, a wholesaler, to reach out to a homeowner that is on one of these code violations lists. Why? Because where there's smoke, there's fire. So the more smoke I see, the more fire I can put out. And once we do that, you align yourself with the best possible chances of getting a wholesale deal. You see, a lot of people create lists to sell you products. Like, hey, Rick, I know you're brand new to real estate and wholesaling, but if you go over to MLS, there's over 10,000 properties there with all the prices, the pictures, the seller's phone number is the easiest list to get a hold of. You need to go to that list. The reality is that list is the worst one you can chase down because it has the least amount of motivation. So here's a rule when I go through these lists, like code violation, I just gave you the answers to exactly how it works, is you want to get the open code violations, not the closed one, for the last 30 days. That's the best part of the list. Now, I'm going to give you a warning right now. You're going to get some resistance in getting this list. It's okay. It's actually normal. You are in the right spot when they kind of say no to you. If you're the type of person that takes no and walk away, I'm going to question you why you're in wholesaling, because wholesaling takes a special attitude. You guys know exactly what I'm talking about. If you don't know, go over to freewholesaling.com. I'll show you exactly how. So what you want to do is get the last 30 days. And if they tell you no, please don't panic. And don't come on and go, Rick, they told me no. I go, I told you, it's sometimes you don't always get what you want. What you have to do is kill them with kindness, and you have to be persistent. To overcome resistance, you've got to beat it with persistence. That does not mean start yelling at a person being nasty. It's the fastest way to get you kicked out of any office. Remember, these people have regular jobs. They're just doing what their boss told them. So the reality is these lists are public information, but the challenge we have is the privacy policy. When I say about the privacy policy, it means what is their policy to give out this personal information? And if you don't qualify, they don't give it to you. So you have to keep coming back and ask the questions in different ways. Hey, can I get that list? Can I get it emailed to me? Can I get it on a thumb drive? Can I talk to your supervisor? I just want to get more information on the county I live in. I believe I pay taxpayers money. I just want to get the information. And you're not going to get it in every county in every city. Like, we get shut down all the time. But once you crack that code, you can usually get them for a long while running, anywhere from 12 to 18 months. And remember, the key here is to figure out How do I crack the code to get that information? The best way is to use a county or a city employee because they already know how to get that information. You just got to figure out the right way to talk to them. And the best way you can do is use your charm, your personality, build rapport, just like I teach you to do with your home sellers, and connect with them. Connect with them on a personal level, their dog, their family, the kids' pictures, their mom, their dad, whatever it is, just like you would with a motivated seller. Guys, this is what it takes to get these lists. This is why me and Zach always get the best deals, because we go after the list with the absolute highest motivation. So I go code violations. It's a lot of work to get there. It's very offline, and these properties aren't on public market. Pain in the butt to get. So it's hard up front, but the back end is actually easy because there's deals there. Now, if I switch over and I do MLS, super easy up front, piece of cake, got all the information, phone numbers. Man, I'm going to pay this guy $5,000 for this course. It's incredible. And 90 days later, I almost guarantee you, if you're brand new, you're going to have zero deals. Or you're going to have to make 10 to 30,000 calls. And honestly, you're not going to know how to talk to the real estate agents and brokers. And easy on the front, miserable on the back end. And I'm trying to tell you with these lists today, do the hard stuff up front, and wholesaling's a lot easier. The only reason you're being told these other lists is because A, it sells product, and B, it keeps people busy. It has, MLS has the highest failure ratio for new wholesalers in the entire business. They won't share that with you. Why? Because they don't want you to know that. The reality is realtors are not big fans of wholesalers and vice versa. I didn't create this mess, but trying to shove a wholesaler's terminology and a wholesale deal down a retail MLS deal is a recipe for disaster for a newbie. I still do it, but I only do it with pocket listings, expired listings, stuff that's 6 months or older. There's got to be a motivating factor for somebody to sell a property on MLS. Remember, they put it there to get top dollar. So I'd rather you switch over to code violations. By the way, I've done code violations since my first 3 months in wholesaling, and I've never stopped. Yes, sometimes they're good, sometimes they're bad, but if you get the most recent 30-day open ones, they're going to be the best ones to get. Let's move on to list number two. We're going to move through this because I want to talk to you guys. So if you guys want to get on here, we'll happy to have a conversation. So high equity list. So you can use our filters. I have them all on freewholesaling.com. I can rattle them off by memory, but it's not going to do you any favors. I prefer you go online and get it there. I update them about every 3 to 6 months, depending on what's working in my business. But for the most part, they're all within 10 to 12% when we make the changes. And honestly, we changed them about 3 months ago and they still work. So I'm not going to change it. I don't have them memorized. They're inside of freewholesaling.com. Go over there and check it out. And we'll go over the whole thing. So a high equity list is really simple. Somebody that has equity in a property. So if somebody bought a property for $100,000 and they put down $10,000, they would have $10,000 in equity. And as time goes over, once they own that house 10, 15, 20 years, their equity goes way up and their mortgage balance goes way down. So maybe 10 years later, depending on the type of mortgage, or 20 years, maybe they only owe $25,000 on the property and they got $75,000 in equity. That will be called 75% equity value in it. So just understanding equity just means how much cash they really have on the property. A lot of it's a vanity mirror because until you sell it, you never know exactly what you make on a house. But sellers like to dream. So how do you get this list? The easiest way to do it, I'm going to give you the simplest way. There's a million ways to do it. You can get it for free. You can get it for paid for. The easiest one to do is basically go over to listrei.com. I put the filter parameters in the bottom here. And when you're looking for 60% equity, 5-year ownership, non-MLS, under the medium home price. I can't stress that one enough. You want to be at worst at medium home price or just below it. Why? Because that's where the most demand for your cash buyers are going to be. And if you go above it, it's going to take you much more time to sell the property and it's harder to find the cash buyers for it. And there's less interest in it. So, and you want to make sure that they don't own 3 or more properties, just 3 or less, not more than 3 owned properties. Once you get into 4 properties, my 21 years of wholesaling statistics shows they are much less likely to negotiate a great deal with you because they are what we call professional real estate investors. And honestly, I'm not looking to wheel and deal with those type of people. You don't want to wheel and deal with people like me. I know the exact numbers. I know how to do this, and I don't need to sell anything. I'm looking for somebody who bought a property and decided this wasn't what I thought it was going to be, especially on a home. Maybe they wind up getting a divorce. Maybe somebody passed away or something like that. But these people usually want to sell quick. We offer speed and convenience in wholesaling, and you want to do it. The three properties or less is key to this. Once they own four or more, your statistical probability of getting a deal will go way, way down. Trust me on this. And then a lot of you call me and go, hey, Rick, I found this guy. He's got like 25 properties. Here's the easiest way to deal with that type of seller. And a lot of them own it outright. Tell them to pick their most tired, weakest, vacant piece of crap property and make a bid on it. And if he or she won't accept the bid on that property, don't waste your time on the other 24. It's a huge time suck, and you don't want to waste time doing that. That simple. Because most of the time, what they want to do is have you give them a contract and they just use it for trade bait with all the other investors. And someone like that doesn't mind going through 20, 30, or 40 wholesalers. I've watched them do it to me. I'm trying to save you the aggravation. When you get someone with a ton of properties, specifically three plus properties, be aware they're most likely going to waste your time. Every now and then it works. So I've only dealt with probably less than five people in my 21 years that own three plus properties that cut me a good wholesale deal. Now, five out of 3,000 plus deals, that's a very, very low probability. And I want you to understand that. So if you get someone to get you all excited and you spend like 6 days working on it, you're usually wasting your time. 10 minute max comp. And when they got 25 properties, tell them to pick your most tired, weakest property and take a stab at it. And if they won't wheel and deal on that property, what are you going to do when they got nice properties that have tenants paying at full price? You're not going to get a great deal on it. Because what they want to do is like, give me an offer, $2 million for, you know, all 20 properties. You don't want to do that. You have to go property by property to see if you're going to make money on it. So I put these simple equity filters up there. If you go over to freewholesaling.com, I have them updated, and we'll go into grave detail for you on how to work it depending on what market you're in and you want to go with that. So number three, tired landlords. I know this list well because I've been on this list multiple times myself. How do I get on the tired landlord list? You have to evict a tenant, the best way to get on there. And when you're evicting a tenant, it means typically they're not paying you, they won't honor the lease, and the property is usually trashed. And you want to get a judge to get them out of there because you've heard every story from them. And at some point, they wear you out. Who do they wear out the most? It's not the guy with 20 or 30 properties. He or she has a property manager, and they do it professionally. It is the mom and pops that own a couple properties, and they just can't take it anymore. And here's the key. They usually have three or less properties. Somebody, some seminar sold them, go get rental properties, let the tenants pay them off, and you are golden. And I'm here to tell you, I started off with this theory before I did wholesaling. It didn't work out. I got hit with two hurricanes, massive property hikes. I got canceled by all the insurance companies. I had to be insured by like the state of Florida. And it was a disaster for me. And that's how I actually got into wholesaling, because I need to learn to make money today. So if I can be caught in this scenario, and I've been caught through in my 21 years multiple times just selling a property because I can't deal with the type of tenants I'm having in that area, I wind up on the tired landlord. How do I get on the tired landlord? I file a lawsuit to evict the tenant. Now, those lists for your tired landlords are at your courthouse. It's going to be at your county courthouse level. And here's the good news. It's extremely public. You know why? Because it's a lawsuit, and you can't hide from a lawsuit. So lawsuits have to be very public, and they can't hide them. So you should have zero runaround on this list. It should be black and white, and honestly, you should be able to find it online. If you can't, go into your local county courthouse and ask for the most freshly updated eviction list over the last 30 days. And as usual, the sooner you get this and reach out, the better your chance of getting a deal. And a lot of states like Michigan and sometimes in Florida, they put the landlord's number on the bottom of the complaint, their cell number. And honestly, not only is that saves you a lot of aggravation and skip tracing, all the fees you have to pay for phone numbers. If you're in the state of Michigan, run with this, because it is a gold mine under that. So I put the list on here. Go to your county courthouse. You can go to List REI under tired landlords and pull it. It's a little bit more dated. I prefer you go to the courthouse and get that information. That's the best way to get it. And just get the list. Now, another way you can chase down tired landlords, if you guys haven't heard me talk about the garage sale list, get the garage sale list in your area. And then basically, once they post a garage sale, you look on social media, Craigslist, Facebook Marketplace, whatever they post them on. And then basically, when they're having a garage sale, as long as they're not a chronic garage sale, people have a garage sale every weekend. Actually, this is their living. Is cross-reference that property and the property appraiser, see who the owner is. And if it's an absentee owner, how do I know if it's an absentee owner? Real simple. It'll have a different mailing address than the physical property. Once you get that, you can skip trace that, and then you call the landlord and say, Mr. Landlord, hey, I see you're having a garage sale at your property XX. And that's all you say. And then they're going to, yeah, so what? Then basically I ask them, hey, do you have any interest in selling the property? Or sometimes when you tell them, they go, what are you talking about? I'm not having a garage sale. I'm like, well, I'm just letting you know. I drove by and they're having a huge garage sale. Were you aware of this? And usually you just informed him that he's having his tenants move out, because the tenant's usually behind a month or two in rent. And you're actually doing him a favor. And if you can connect with him, think about it. He's going to have vacant property. It's going to be trashed. He didn't know they were moving out. And he's got to figure out, he or she's got to figure out how to solve this problem. You're the first one to the chase, and nobody else knows about the property. That's why I love doing that. That would qualify for your tired landlord ones. It's an exhausting list to chase down, but you can do it all in the comfort of your own home, your home office, and it's easy to get a hold of. I used to mail to them. Now we cold call on them. It works well. The element of surprise is what works so effective on the tired landlord. So you can get them from your courthouse. You can get them with listrei.com, or you can do the garage sale list method that I taught you about. Do the one that works the best for you. So the next one, this is kind of going without saving. I'm going to save you a $3,000 course right here. Driving for dollars, just get in your car and look for ugly houses. I'm going to put it on the bottom for you in case you missed that. You're going to drive around, find ugly houses your cash buyers want in the areas that you are looking to do your wholesaling business in. And typically, guys, if you live in a really nice neighborhood, like you live with your parents, don't be driving around in that neighborhood, because those aren't the hot type of houses you're looking for. You're looking for the average median price or below. The lower, the more cash buyers you're going to have for it. So they're typically going to be outlying areas, not your parents' home, stuff like that. And just look for average, what we call blue collar workers. If you don't know what a blue collar worker is, let me give you a crash course. It's what you don't want to be in today's market. I'm sorry. It's just the truth. These are the people that are going to go to the body shops and work, the car dealerships. They're going to work as managers at the restaurants. They're typically working 8 to 12 hour days, and then they want to come home to a safe place. Nothing wrong with that. But as a wholesaler, we're looking for something much, much better. And these are the type of people you want to service the most, because they want the ultimate convenience and they don't want to overpay for anything. But the minute a property comes available, they either want to rent it or buy it right away. That's why you want to find ugly homes in these areas, because in my opinion, they have the most demand, hands down, from retail buyers, from landlords, from dad buying their kid like their first starter home. These are the best ones to get. When you start to get into $800,000-$900,000 houses, depending on what market you're in, the buyers are more sophisticated and the sellers are even more sophisticated, and they typically like to work with brokers once you approach that $1 million mark. So stay at the average median price or slightly below it. And then remember, the more you can find in these blue collar areas, the better off you're going to do. It works really well. Moving on, number five, I'm not spending a lot of time on driving for dollars, so we're going to be done in 5 minutes here. Pre-foreclosures. Now, I started out doing this. This is a list that you're typically, you're going to go down to your county and you're looking for the list pendants. Yeah, I did spell that wrong. Let me fix that. You're looking for your list pendants and just the NODs, notice of default. And basically this is, let me put it up there. This is basically when a homeowner stops paying on their mortgage. A mortgage is when you borrow money to buy the house. So if you bought a house for $300,000, you got a mortgage for $280,000, you got to make monthly payments to the bank. And if you don't, the bank can file a lawsuit, which is basically a foreclosure, and sue you to take the asset back to recoup their losses from the mortgage. And it happens in every market all around the country. It never stops. It's been going on for 21 years. The key with pre-foreclosures is try to catch them in the first 90 days. Why? Because once they get past 90 days, the procrastination train runs wild. And if you know what I mean by that, they just, I got it all figured out. Don't worry about it. You don't want to get past the 3-month period, because then they're going to wait till their property is put on the auction block. A judge hits them with a full judgment, and then they're looking for a miracle in the last 2 weeks from you. And honestly, as a beginner, you cannot do it, because you have to hire a lawyer to even have a shot at it. And let's face it, how many homeowners are going to pull out $2,000 to $3,000 just to have a 50-50 shot if they can stop the sale? So try to catch them in the beginning. That's why we always emphasize pre-foreclosure. That's a notice. If you don't start making payments on this, we are going to sue you. If you catch them, the homeowner's scared. They want to solve the problem. They realize they can't afford the home. And that's where someone like you, the wholesaler, can help them out and create a huge win-win situation. Think about this. You fix their credit. You stop a judgment against the property. You save them the embarrassment of having a sheriff kick them out of the house, and you give them the dignity to move out of the house when they want. And hopefully, if they catch you early enough, you can actually give them some money from the sale. The problem is that they wait too long, the court fees, the arrears interest from the bank, the late fees, and then the worst off are the attorney's fees. It's going to eat what little equity they have left in those properties. So that's why you always want to catch a foreclosure sooner than later. That's why we emphasize pre-foreclosure. Pre-foreclosures, they start missing payments. And then once the bank files the lawsuit, it eventually files over to a foreclosure. And then if it goes all the way to the auction, which is a forced sale, which they basically do an online bid, then they lose the house to a foreclosure auction. And remember, if you can catch them in that first 3 months, that's the best way to do it. My favorite technique for dealing with foreclosures, the problem is they don't really answer their mail. And let's face it, they're not great on the phone calls. But if I had to pick between mail and phone calls, it would be a phone call every time. The next best way to do it is reverse driving for dollars. Get a list. If you got 25 pre-foreclosures, go out, put a sticky note on the door and say, listen, just got a quick question about your house. Is Rick, put on your phone number there and then have them call you. And if you put out 25 and 5 call you, you did a great job, because you saved 20 painful conversations. And hopefully you have a shot at meeting with some of those 5 individuals to see if you can strike a deal with them. So I love pre-foreclosures. It's just knocking on the doors like I used to do it with Ring cameras and all this other stuff. It's much more challenging these days. And you got to be aware of that. So number 6, I would be dismissive not to let you know. JV deals, which stands for joint ventures, is basically how you work with people, just like in these comment feeds right here. And I'm looking at some of your questions on here. I love JVs because, first of all, at sellmypaper.com, I make a living off of doing JVs with you guys. They've got to be good deals. I don't even hide the fact from you. And if they're not good deals, we give you feedback on how to find better deals. And if you don't know how to do it, start at freewholesaling.com. That is the best way for getting anything like that. So the stream might be lagging a little bit. I am on a remote site, but it says it's feeding just fine here. So put in the comments if you got anything else missing with that. I love JV deals. It's just about networking. And then the best JV deal you can do is if you're really good working with sellers, but you suck with cash buyers, go find a JV partner that is really good with cash buyers, and guys, work together. Ideal situation, 50-50. Some wholesalers get greedy and want 80%, you get 20%, or they go, how much do you want for it? I'll take 70 grand, and he tries to sell for 95. Try to get a synergy relationship, because if it gets too lopsided, people get upset, and I've seen it all the time. So the best way to enter in a JV agreement is 50-50. If the other partner has to put up money for a deal that actually has to be funded, it might be 60-40. That would make sense, because if you have to put up the money. But the idea is work with them, because I'd rather you make some money than no money. And think about this. If you can work with them, they teach you the skill sets they have, it is a huge win-win. That's all about learning and earning at the same time. It is the best way to do it. And just please make sure you do the JV paperwork and the partnership with it. It's so important that you have it, And it's like, okay, Rick, I entered into a JV agreement. What do I do with that? How do I hold them accountable? It's actually really simple. Once they sign that paperwork, you go straight to the title company with it. And that title company is the one that represents your interest because they know that deal can't be funded without you getting paid. It's not the seller you go to. It is the contract and then the JV contract. And if that all goes to the title company, you guys agree to use it, it's really hard to get screwed out of a JV deal. That's how me and Zach do it. That's how we recommend you guys doing it. And that's what I want you to do on JV deals. So I saved the best for last. You know which last ones I'm going to do. You already know. I see it in the comments. It's probates. You're crazy if you don't do probates. I love probates. Probates, basically, when somebody passes away, they can't sell the property because the deed can't be transferred from a deceased person's name. So there is a court process called probate. And probate simply is the court process of winding up a deceased person's financial affairs in title. So that's going to include bank accounts, CD deposits, stock certificates, bonds, trusts, estates, real estate, cars, boats, planes, trucks, automobiles, you name it. Now, fortunately, most people's biggest asset is the home they live in. For 95% of Americans, that's it. And most people don't know what to do when it comes to probate. So here's what I recommend to you. I'm going to give you the long story short. Go to your clerk of court, find your probate records. Okay, you got to find the probate records. And there is the probate court. What you want to do is find the deceased persons. And then you want to locate the PR, which is the personal representative, also called the executor, depending on which state you're in. And then basically, once you have that information, you can skip trace it. Now, you have to see if that person owns property in the county where you're talking about. So the best way to do that is cross-reference your property appraiser site, and then from there you skip trace that phone number. Now, here's the problem. Skip tracing a deceased person's phone number is not really the best idea. You're gonna have to go to the docket on the probate file and find out who the PR is. And PR, short for personal representative, it's the person who is in charge of the deceased person's estate. It is the responsible party, the one that's going to make all the decisions, and they have the same power as the deceased person. That's the person you have to connect with. So many of you guys come to me and go, Rick, I couldn't connect with the lawyer. They wouldn't work with me. You do not want to connect with the lawyer. You want to avoid the lawyer like the plague because the lawyer is representing the seller's interest, not yours. And honestly, if you met with your seller and they've agreed with you and they want to strike a deal with you, you want to fast track it. You want to go straight line as fast as you can to get the seller and get a signed agreement. If you have to go through the lawyer, it's going to be difficult. They're going to stonewall you with real estate agents, brokers, appraisals, BPOs, and then the dreaded, you have to wait till the probate's over. It's complete BS. It's hogwash. I've proved it thousands of times. You do not have to wait till the probate is over. There, I know there's a few exceptions across the country, but for the most part, 98% of the country, you can close on a piece of real estate asset that's included in a probate before the probate process is completed. Ask me how I know. I've done it tons and tons of times. You can do it too, but you're told by every other person. Title companies are pretty good about it. They actually know about this, but every probate lawyer, every real estate agent, every real estate broker will tell you, you have to wait till the probate's done. It's a lie. I'm telling you right now. And if you teach them how to get their probate sold before done, why? Because the probate process can take anywhere from 6 months to 2 years. And if I got to pay a mortgage and I got to pay a bunch of bills and I got to mow the lawn and I've got to turn on the AC and I got to plow the snow out of the driveway, I want to get rid of that property. I don't want to live in it. I didn't even want it to begin with. I need to wrap this thing up. And it's the easiest way. And most of these properties need repairs. They're vacant. They are perfect for wholesaling. And they are hands down by far the most profitable deals you'll ever do. Ask me how I know this because I learned this through my accountant because he would point out, hey, you need to do more deals like these five you have right here. Looked them up. They're all probates. He said to me, he goes, why don't you figure out how to do probate on purpose? And that's how I came up with PPS. So I taught a detailed course on how to do it. If you guys want more information on how to do it, join me over at Flip with Rick Plus. I'll share with you a little later how to do that. Guys, I love probates. And honestly, they're a lot slower. They take time. but they are absolutely amazing. Now, I'm going to give you one little cheat sheet to probates. If you go, Rick, I have a full-time job. I don't have time to do the probates. I get it. You go down to the courthouse, you pull up. It's a lot of work. I get it. There is one other option for you if you're like a busy person and you just want to do it at the courthouse. Go to listrei.com and then they will have what they call a pre-probate section there. What's really cool about it is it references the death property records when somebody's deceased, basically a death certificate. And then if they own a property in that county where they passed away, is it's going to correlate and put them on a pre-probate list. Now, I want you to understand, it's a little bit dated information. It's not as fast as what you get at the courthouse, but I will tell you this, it's pretty accurate. Now, you don't need to pull the list every month. You can do it once a quarter, if not every other month, if you want to be a little more aggressive about it. And here's the really cool part. It catches properties that actually don't go through probate. Not everyone that passes away goes through probate, depending on how they title the property. If it's in a trust, I don't want to get in the legality works of it, but 50% of properties actually pass through without going through the probate. How they do it, it's how they title the property. And if they had a good lawyer and they pre-planned it, some people do, then you can get shots at it. In my opinion, whenever there's a death certificate, somebody passed away, it is one of the most motivating factors you can have in wholesaling real estate. And the death certificate alone is cause to reach out to anybody that's associated with a property. So if you don't want to do the official thing, like I teach you how to go down to the courthouse and do all that, that's fine. Go to listrei.com, use the pre-probate. It's in the quick filters on the top. Check it out. I pull it once a quarter. I always get deals off of it. It's a little bit different. And remember, you don't have to pull it every month. I'm trying to save you some aggravation because I've already tried that. It doesn't work, but once a quarter for sure. So guys, I know that I got to like breathe a little bit. That was a lot of talking there, but these are the lists, the seven lists that I go to right now to get my best, most motivated deals. Are there more? Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm just here to tell you, these are the lists I like to do right now. We're in a market where interest rates are stagnant. They're high. People are getting harder and harder decisions whether to sell. Some people are holding on 2 to 3% mortgages. I think it's only going to get tougher in the next year. So a lot of people are pushing their motivation back, thinking time's going to cure it. Time's not going to cure it. Interest rates are not going down anytime soon. And I don't think we're going to see 2 to 3% interest rates probably for another 5 years plus. We might never see them. Guys, you got to understand, before that run of interest rates, we've only seen interest rates like that once before. And I think there was a brief period during 9/11. Because they wanted to stimulate the economy. But for the most part, I think you're going to see 6 to 7% interest rates as a fixture over the next 3 to 4 years. I don't know. I'm not the Fed. I'm not, Powell. But I don't think we're going to see 2 or 3% for a long, long time. So let me check the questions here. We'll jump. If you guys want to jump on and do a one-on-one, let's do it. I'm out and about, so as long as I have people here, if I promise you, if you jump on now, I guarantee I talk to you. I can't give you better odds than that. So let me see out to. So here's a good one. And so, hey, Michelle, how you doing? She says, basically, can you wholesale a pre-foreclosure when the seller has filed the bankruptcy? Technically, yes, but it does complicate it. So I want to just get this one out of the way. People file bankruptcy as a strategy to stall the foreclosure. Most people's intentions are not to file for bankruptcy. I'm sorry. Why? Because there's not a week that doesn't go by. Someone doesn't call one of my salespeople and say, I'm going to file a bankruptcy to cure my foreclosure. So let's deep dive into bankruptcy. You're only saying that because you have to actually qualify for bankruptcy. In the old days, 10 years ago plus, you could file for bankruptcy and you could pretty much get away with murder. Now with the new bankruptcy laws, I'm not an attorney, but they can backdate and look in your records up to 2 years prior. And if you try to purposely set up a bankruptcy, they'll dismiss you. Do you understand when people file bankruptcy and they have to turn in their cars? Occasionally, they can keep their homestead and property, but their assets, their cash, They got motorcycles, they're RVs. And honestly, I've never met someone who goes, yeah, I want to go through that intrusive process. Plus, you have to stand in front of a trustee, you and your wife, if it's with you, and you have to explain your story and you have to show them. And if you don't have a triggering, if you haven't lost your job or lost your business and show a staggering amount of debt, you are not going to qualify for bankruptcy. Most people file bankruptcy to stall the foreclosure. You know why? So they can stay in the house longer for basically scotch-free, rent-free. And so either bankruptcy goes all the way through or they dismiss it. And you have to track it in the court system what they do. But the problem with a bankruptcy, until they're released from bankruptcy, you have to go through the trustee to do anything with that property. That's why it's messy. Also, if you enter into an agreement with a seller, when I've done this plenty of times, my God, they've done this to me. Somebody, and if you don't stay in contact with them and their neighbor says, hey, I got a great attorney, he'll get you to file bankruptcy and get you out of this, is the minute they file for bankruptcy, it voids your contract out. So you got to be aware of that. So how do you prevent that? You got to stay in contact with them. And don't ever suggest to a seller to file bankruptcy. Number one, you can't give legal advice or accounting advice. And number two, you don't want to be accountable. Like, trust me, bankruptcy is very obtrusive. They have to go back and give all their tax returns. They have to give updated financials every 30 days. And then when they get through bankruptcy, they basically have what they call like the trustee meets with them every 30 days to submit financial information to make sure they're doing their end of the bargain. And if they don't comply, and by the way, I believe there's a 10 or 15% premium of whatever the bill sets are that the trustee gets paid. That's how the court, they don't get paid like that. They get dismissed from the bankruptcy and all the debt falls back on them. So most of the time when people talk about bankruptcy and foreclosure, it's a tactic. It's not a strategy because most people don't understand what it entails to go through basically bankruptcy. And by the way, you ever see these signs for like $99 a bankruptcy? You're kidding yourself. So the court fees are around, I think, between $800 and $1,200, which state you do. And then if you have a good attorney, you got to pay them per hour to work on your bankruptcy case. And honestly, most bankruptcy cases, the paperwork's like that thick. So a judge has to go through it. Trustees have to go through it. And then obviously your lawyer and then you and your spouse, whoever else is involved. Trust me, when someone says, listen, I'm just going to file for bankruptcy as opposed to doing a foreclosure, walk them through it. So you're willing to give up everything you own because that's what you're going to do. Plus they got to be babysat. And they have to sign an affidavit. And if they lie on that affidavit and commit perjury to the bankruptcy court, you go to jail for it. So most people talk. Now, anybody can file for bankruptcy. It doesn't mean it's going to be accepted. The minute it's filed for bankruptcy, the notice is put onto the foreclosure court and they stop the proceedings. But what most people understand is just temporary. It might be 3 months. It might be 6 months. But you actually have to go through, pay all the fees. You got to do all the court appearances and then you have to submit all your financials and then you have to give up all your assets. And most people, when you talk to them about bankruptcy, nobody wants to do that. Like what sane person wants to go through all that? And you have to document the entire event. So you got to kind of know what's going on to it. So actually, Michelle, that's a great question because I get it all the time. The number one defense I get on people in pre-foreclosure or even foreclosure is I'm going to file bankruptcy. So I don't want you to scare anybody. But make sure they've talked to a lawyer to understand what that entails. And you have to have a qualifying event for bankruptcy. You can't just have a good job and you're in over your head on your house. That doesn't qualify for bankruptcy alone. You typically have to be unemployed with a huge pile of debt. And remember, they can back look at you. If they see you set this up on purpose and manipulated, you'll be dismissed and you'll actually be fined for it. Now, I'm not a lawyer, but I'm just telling you, I've helped a lot of people out through these scenarios. I've seen it all. And 10 years ago when they changed it, it is not easy to file bankruptcy. And when you sit down and actually talk to the attorney, they'll tell you because they don't want you to pay them to get it started only to find out you're not going to qualify because that hurts the attorney on it. So, okay, let's jump on here. So Yvonne, real quick, on the foreclosure list, depending, hopefully you're getting it from the courthouse directly. On the actual docket, they're usually going to have the parcel number or the tax ID number. And sometimes they have the legal description. You're going to have to copy and paste that and cross-reference it to your property appraiser's site to find that out. So okay, you guys are answering. So Michelle, we talked about the bankruptcy, but the thing is you got to talk about all the other stuff besides the house. And what they don't realize is your car, you got to turn it in. Like, you can get exceptions for it, but if like you're driving around with a Land Rover with a $60,000 loan, that thing's gone. The bank's never going to accept you driving that car. Every piece of cash in your house, and by the way, your home does get inspected. They'll walk through every piece of it. And remember, if you commit perjury, you go to jail. So a lot of people don't understand the severity of bankruptcy until they get down, and then they always like, I'm not going to do that. It's too scary. So, okay, let's jump on and do some lives here. Deb, you there?
Yes.
How you doing? Yeah, I hear you fine. Can you hear me?
Yes, last week I hopped on too late. I never got a chance to talk to you.
Okay, well, I just felt it. I just went to you first.
Exactly. I hopped on. Hey, I saw a house and I talked to the neighbors. The person died about, I think, in 2020.
Okay.
But this week it's just been vacant. I can't get in touch with anyone. But I saw a sign in the window. It was like, no trespassing. This house is not, you can't view it or something until it's able to sell, until the time of sale. And say, for more houses like this, go to the HUD, www.hub, HUD home store. So does that mean that the people don't own it anymore?
So the first thing you want to look up is go to your property appraiser site and see who the owner of record is on it.
It's in a deceased person's name.
It's still in the seat, and it has a HUD. What did it say exactly on the sign?
Okay, it says, I took a picture of it, but the sun was out. It said, no trespassing. This property may not be entered until it's offered for sale. Let's see, when it's available for sale, arrangements to view the property may be made through any licensed real estate of your choice. Said for more properties like this and others, go to www.thehudhomestore.com. And then it's for like if it's under the management of some Lincoln Enterprises, you know, if they have any issues, I guess, like with the yard or anything,
yeah.
Call that number.
So obviously you have not gotten in touch with the current any type of ownership on the property, right? Like Harris or anything?
I've sent out, you know, mailers and called all the numbers on, you know, that I got from Badge.
Okay.
I haven't gotten a response back.
So here's the reality on these properties. They're never 100%. Like, and the thing is, I'm gonna save you the effort. If you can't get in touch with some sort of responsible party to sell it, there's not a whole lot you can do. Like, you want to try everything. I'm not sure about that sign, but here's what I suspect. I suspect they might have a mortgage on the property. They stop paying it, and it might be in some sort of foreclosure, because usually when you have HUDs. But I would go through that website and just ask somebody just to kind of walk through what's going on with it. But the other thing you can do is see if there's a mortgage on the official records for that property. So all you have to do is put in the deceased person's name on record and put it in the official records and look for a mortgage. I suspect there's a mortgage, and it might
on
be
on the HUD store.
Yeah. Usually when they this HUD, the HUD usually is going to indicate a Fannie or Freddie made. And then usually they give it to an asset manager to take care of the property. They can't sell it till they foreclose on it. Now I'm going to be honest with you. If that's the case, it's probably going to be a pain in the butt, because if they died in 2020, that's been 3 years. So
yeah, because the taxes are being paid and they purchased a house in 83.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So what I would try to do is I would just see if there's a mortgage on record. It's very public information. Okay. And then you can start putting two to two together. If you have PropStream, it'll probably spit it out in one search for you. And if you don't have one, go to listrei.com, hook up a free one, and it'll spit that information out for you. It makes it kind of easy. If not, you can just look it up by hand. It's really not that hard. But odds are it's probably in foreclosure. It's probably in an asset manager's hand, and they're waiting for the official paperwork before they can actually sell the property. The only way you can beat that around that is if you find an heir that will open a probate. But remember, you still got to beat the foreclosure. So the odds are against you. I'm just being honest with you.
Okay.
But that's what you want to look for. And most people spend all their time trying to do comps and everything. You're doing the right thing. You try to chase down the owner. Because
Yes. There's
not a week that doesn't go by in my life. Someone says, hey, Rick, I found 10 foreclosures for you. I'm like, here's my question to every one of them. Did you talk to the owners? Oh, no, I don't do that. That's where all the bread and butter is. That's where all the money's made.
Right.
Whoever can talk to the owners. But sometimes I don't want you spending 10 hours on a wild goose chase where you're not going to get anywhere. I don't think you're going to get anywhere. And I'm just telling you the truth. Try it one more time. And if not, like, just kind of move on. Because I think the property's probably in some sort of foreclosure stage. And that asset manager is saying, I can't sell this property until we take it back. And that's probably why you have that sign in the window. Because if it didn't have the sign in the window, I would actually be more excited for you.
Yeah. Okay. So now I found this other property driving for dollars.
Okay.
And I find it. So how do I approach the family? Because the lady just passed away the middle of June.
Okay.
So, you know, when I reach out to the family, because I don't want to seem like, you know,
okay. So I got you, Deb. So for the longest time, I didn't do cold calls on probates for this exact scenario we're talking about right now. And you understand why, right?
Driving for a dollar lead. I don't know if it's in probate or not.
Okay. So, but somebody passed away, right?
Yes. The neighbor told me, because I was, you know, put a sticky note on the door.
So it's awesome. A driving for dollars deal located a probate. And that's perfect. And they probably haven't filed for it yet. So you're what we call a pre-probate. Like, nobody knows but you and the neighbor. The neighbor ain't going to do anything about it. It is a touchy phone call. I'm not going to lie to you. It's not easy. So the best way to deal with it is not to rear the white elephant in the room. So if you're going to call and skip trace and get their number, go, listen, hey, I was driving by. I saw this property on 46th Street and just want to know if that's your property. Simple as that. Not, hey, I heard somebody died in your family. You can't do that.
Oh, no, I'm not going to ever say that.
No, but you just simply do that. And then just say, she'll say, hey, listen, why are you asking? Well, you know, I might be interested in buying a house in that neighborhood. Property kind of seems to foot the bill. Is that something I can discuss with you? And simple as that. Just simplify it. Because most of you overthink when you try to talk to people. Think about when you talk to your friends. Think about that awkward neighbor that pissed you off like 6 months ago. And you just go, listen, life's short. I'm not going to like carry this around forever. Let's just get it over with right now. Kind of think of it like that. But they always say, hey, I heard so-and-so die. Just call like you're looking. Hey, I just drove by the house. Make it a little bit personal. My name's Deb. The house seemed interesting. Can you tell me something about it? Put your own spin on it. You don't need to do what I do. You're really good at talking to people. I can tell. Just have the conversation and that's it. And if they go, no, we're keeping the house. Go, listen, I wish you the best of luck. Anything changes, give me a call back. And if they want to discuss it, go into it with them and talk to them. And then try to set up an appointment to meet with them about the house. And remember, probate's all about letting people tell you their story. And you have to connect with them. Because if you haven't gone, like, at some point, everybody has to deal with it. It's very tough. Because a lot of people look at these, we call houses, we call them properties. But when people, when they pass away and they call them a home, it's of extreme emotional attachment. And it's tough. I've been through three of them myself, personally, my family. I know how it is. It sucks. And the only way to get them to detach from it is let them tell the story and help them on their journey on where they want to go. That's why I get such great probate deals. I do not make it transactional. I make it very emotional. I help people out the best I can. There you are. I got a face.
Yeah, awesome. I'm sorry. I thought I was on camera.
It's okay.
Rick, I just decided I'm going to get up off my butt. I am terrified to cold call. But I have been cold calling, have been getting a lot of answers from my list.
Uh-huh.
That's okay. But I just said, I'm just going to, I got one lady and she's like, everyone has been calling about this house. And she was just cussing. I mean, I was like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
You are the same lady that called me last week. I'm like, man, No. I said, okay, ma'am, I do apologize.
But you know what? You got to understand, like, so I grew up in an era where I was, like, I was desperate. I did door-to-door knocking 10 times more terrifying than cold calling. Now, I don't have the patience for cold calling. And like my son was really good at it and it was a perfect match for our business. But the worst they can do is what on a cold call with you? What's the worst thing they can do?
Cuss me out and hang up. That's it.
So like, yeah, I read a really good book about like letting things go. And when something doesn't go your way, and God knows it happens to all of us, instead of just getting pissed off and dropping F-bombs left and right, sometimes I go, well, that was interesting. Because I get people light me up I have deals fall apart all the time.
What was the name of that book?
David Singer wrote a book called The Untethered Soul. Really good book. Oprah recommended it. And if you ever wear a lot of things, stuff go on. It's a really short read. It's a really good, I like life books. I know you guys think I read every wholesaling book, but I do read life books. And the one thing I learned in my last 10 years of wholesaling was you have to detach. So if you're doing cold calls or you're doing personal appointments, when it's over, you can't bring it back to your family. You can't let it screw your day up because people.
That's what I have to work on.
That's what they do. And you go, and so every now and then they'll say some weird, they'll say some really terrible stuff. And you go, well, that's interesting. And you just kind of it's not a diss. It's just well, that was interesting. And so I find myself saying it more and more. I say it to my friends sometimes when they do stuff to I'm like, well, that was interesting. You said that instead of just saying, F you or something like that.
Yeah. Why would you,
you just gotta let it go through you. Because you don't need to wear remember, you have stuff going on in your life. I have stuff going on in my life. And you got to understand when we cold call people, they dump on us. And sometimes they dump good. A lot of times they dump bad. Yeah. But you got to understand, have you ever been in a bad situation in your life and somebody caught you at a bad moment? Not even on the phone, but in person and you let them up. I've done it. We've all done it. We're all walking around with stuff going on. And you just can't take it personally because you've done it too. We've all done it. But the problem is sometimes cold calling, you're like, my God, is everybody going to dump on me today? And don't be that friend that dumps on everybody. How's things going? It's sometimes it's okay. You have those certain friends that you can talk about when you have some rough times, but you ever have that friend, they just dump on you no matter what. I'm like, oh my God, I could be at a New Year's party. I'm like, dude, I got to leave you. You're bringing me down. So let it go through you. And it's a really good book. If you guys read it.
Process.
Yeah.
Okay. I have just one other
go ahead, shoot.
Thing about the probate. Cause I know other people want to get on now where I'm here in Shelby County. They don't give you, there's not a list. They gave me a number to start with. I said, okay, give me the probate number. And so it has all the probates, what do you call it? For children, all of that is all in there. Yeah. Oh my God, that's painstaking to go through number by number. It has all of that mixed in there together. There's not a list that you can go look up or anything that I can pull. I've gone there and I finally got someone to talk to me. And I asked for the manager. She was real nice. And she gave me a number to start this search. I can look it up online. But it's P-R-O-O, six numbers. And I was like, oh, my gosh. I have to go through each number. And I was like, there's not a better way. So I think I'll do what you said about, you said list REI and pre-probates.
Pre-probates, it's good. So especially for those of you that do virtual markets. Honestly, it's the best way to go, unless you have a local hookup that can go to the county courthouse. But the pre-probate, it's kind of like a catch-all. Like, it's not perfect, but you don't have to kill your brain around it. So if you already have a listrei.com account, to me, I do it for my virtual ones because, especially outside the state of Florida,
for local here, but that's all they would give me. So it's got the, what do you call it for the kids? If you're getting conservatorships, it's got all of that.
Yeah.
It's not broken down by probates or anything like that.
Okay. Which state are you in again?
I'm in the state of Tennessee. It's not broken down by real estate and things like that. So it's, got conservatorship. All of that is in here. And I was like, oh my goodness. It's over.
What part of Tennessee are you in? You don't have to give me exact.
No. Okay. I'm in Memphis.
Okay. So I have a lot of investor friends that do Tennessee. You have a wonderful state for investing. So I love buying properties.
Okay, so when I get my deal, I know I can come to you and
Anytime, yeah. Dude. I am very versed in Tennessee. So it's one of my favorite places because I've been doing it for 5 years plus. So I know. But I only do it with partners. I don't – like if someone can find a deal, we can help put it together. I love doing that. And so I figured out a lot of the marketing over there too. A little bit more on the advanced stuff, some of the stuff, strategy I do. But what I'm saying is Tennessee is a wonderful place to invest. So you're in the right market. I would run with it because Tennessee is still, in my opinion, an affordable market. Obviously, Nashville and stuff like that is kind of priced out. But you still have a lot of, affordable areas. I did Knoxville. I kind of out of that now. But there was a ton of multifamilies there. But the other thing you can do with the probates, unless you go down to the county and try to talk someone, have a probate county employee walk you through, like, how can I sort this docket out? Because it doesn't make sense. The reason they do it so it doesn't make sense to you and me, because they don't, it's only meant for judges, lawyers, and paralegals. Like, that's it. It's not even for the regular, like, person who files the lawsuit. They don't even understand it. That's why they have an attorney. It's so ridiculous how our court system works. But you can try that route if you have the patience to do it. And every now and then someone will walk you through, like, okay, here's how you do it. Here's how you sort them. Here, these odds are, if when you see this number in this code, it means this. I'm like, and the crazy thing is every county is different. Like, I'm in the state of Florida. I deal with 5 counties. It's like going to 5 different countries, in my opinion.
I remember you saying that.
I'm so like, how can this be?
And I try, see if they can tell me how to sort this out.
I know. And I tried that argument for the longest time, and I didn't get anywhere with it. So you can't go in and go, I don't understand. This county does it that. Why wouldn't you do the same? And the problem is, they have the same procedural state policies, but they have their own court policies. And until you get very familiar with them, it's almost impossible to scale probates. People, I'm going to scale probates all over the country. I go, well, let me know how that works out. I've yet to meet anyone that can do it. It's very tough. If I could do it, I would be the guy that would do it. It would take a team of 100 plus employees, a huge payroll. And honestly, I like doing the deals. Like, trust me, I get into the data and stuff, but like sometimes when it gets over my head, I'm like, okay, how can we get a deal today? I don't want to do all this crap. And you guys got to be the same way too. So check out the pre-probate. It's in the quick filter list, and it does work. It's perfect for someone like you, a solo operator. This is confusing. Let me just do a one hit, and you don't have to pull it every month either. That's the beauty.
I heard you say that.
So once a quarter.
I'm going to hop off and let someone else get on, but thank you. I'll stay on. I can stay on in the back office, right? Or do I have to hop on?
No, you're good. And then just listen. You're very good with talking to people. Just go in and talk. And like, you guys, the main thing is people can hear if you're scared. It's okay to be humble and be like trying to help people out. If you do that, they'll hear it. But like, if you're scared to make the call, you got to get over that as soon as possible. You're you sound great. So just make the phone call.
You're different. You're not a, you know, person I'm calling out the blind, you know, just out the blue.
I don't know you. So it's the same thing. And you're on like the public air. So it takes guts to do this. The same thing. Your cold calls, they won't be recorded or they won't be put on live. So you should kind of look at them like this way. They don't even see my face. I get to see your face. So it's wonderful.
Okay.
You got it, Deb. Just keep doing it. I'm telling you, you're taking the right actions. You just got to keep them doing over and over again. Okay.
All right. Thank you so
much. Okay. You have a wonderful day.
You do as well.
Yeah. Okay. Bye. Joseph, you there?
Hey, how you doing?
Good, man. How are you?
I'm fine.
What's going on, man? What can I help you out with?
Nothing much. I just have like a quick question. Because up here in Ohio, I can go to the website and find the probate case with number, address, and everything.
Gotcha.
So I'm pretty short of budget, so I'm doing it with two people search, and it's taking, you know, some time to do it. But the only filter is give me the case to by year. So I have the I input 2023, and it's giving me all the 2023, and it's more than 3,000 something.
Okay.
So here is my question: how often I need to make the calls if the person do not answer? Because I have over 3,000, and I need to keep calling. I really break the ice to start to call calling.
So the first time I wouldn't leave a message, and then I'd probably wait. 3,000 is a lot, so you got to get through them. The second time I would probably leave a simple message, and by the third time I'd leave a follow-up message, because the problem is if you don't leave a message ever, it does get exhausting. And then here's the key is when you leave a message, make it different and unique. Do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah.
It's like, hey, I'm calling. I saw the house is in probate. A lot of times leaving a message simply like this, hey, it's Joseph calling. Just got a quick question. Give me a call back. You're going to get a much higher response rate because they, do you understand people call you back? Like, let me ask this, Joseph, somebody ever call you on your cell phone and you miss it? Do you call that number back?
Yeah, most of the time they leave a text message. I call them back.
But if they don't leave a text message or a message, do you call them back?
No.
Okay. So you're the exception. This is a good example. The reality is most people, by the way, marketing companies do this all the time. Do you ever get like a strange call and nobody answers and you hear a click or two and then you never hear it again? You know what's happening?
I mean, if I don't recognize the number, the only way I can pick it up is that person called me twice in less than an hour.
I got it. So the reason you get these kind of call hangups, it's a machine calling you to verify that you're a real number, and then they put you in a big giant database, and then you're going to get hammered. The second reason is when somebody calls you and they don't leave a message, human nature, probably 85%, you're the exception. So, Joseph, don't listen to this one. People are so curious, it kills them. They got to call back the number. And here's what they say. Did you just call me? And that's what they do. So you're going to kind of do the same thing. So if you just leave a message, hey, this is Joseph, I got a quick question, they're going to call you back because they're going to assume you're an old friend. You know something. The curiosity kills the cat every time. That's the best way to leave a message. When people leave these details, hey, this is Joseph, I'm with ABC Home Buyers. I saw that your house is listed with a probate. I'd like to get some more details. Please call me back at your earliest convenience. Most of the time, they're not going to call you back because they don't want to hear something.
Most of the time what I'm trying to say is or me and my wife or me and my uncle. Mm-hmm. I don't try to do like I'm an investor or something like that. No, we are trying to my uncle and I'm trying to purchase a house in the neighborhood and just wondering because your property caught my attention I'm trying to make it the more original I can.
I got it. So the first one I would skip and see if they call you back. The second one, leave a simple voicemail. Hey, this is Joseph. And then maybe the third one, hey, this is Joseph. I just had a quick question about the house. That's about as far as you can go. And then you can put them in a 30-day follow-up and try it from there. Listen, not everyone's going to connect on the phone numbers, but the main thing is to get through them and don't be paralyzed. Like, did I leave a message? Did I not? Just have a system of like 1, 2, 3, past three, it starts to get borderline like harassing and you they'll let you know real quick. Now, maybe the fourth one, you could throw them in like a text. You could try something like that. But, you know, I don't have the perfect answer for it. I'm just telling you how we do it. Because if we leave a detailed message on the first try, they never call us back. So yeah. We do a missed phone call, just a simple friend voicemail. And then the third one, maybe something about the house. And then we kind of keep ratcheting it up. Then we will put them in a text blast just to take a shot at it. And then a lot of times we send them a letter. And after that, if they don't respond, I move on with my life. You can't make anybody sell you a house. Like sometimes they just don't want to sell it. They don't have an interest. But you do, if you keep up with it, eventually you find the people that go, hey, I'm glad you called. I had some questions like how you guys operate. So most of the time, once you get them on the phone, the probate, you have to do what, Joseph? You got to let them talk. Just let them talk till they churn blue. Because when someone wants to sell you a house on probate, they typically want the least amount of resistance. So you just got to make it as super simple as possible. Does that help you out?
Yeah.
Okay. What else you got?
No, I think that's for now because I don't want to jump and like in a virtual market for now. Because I'm trying to focus just what I can see. But I can, you know, drive around, and then after I can complete my first deal, so I can spend more, you know, some budget in.
You got it. Well, 3,000 numbers, that's a good start. So get out there, make the call, do the 1-2-3 system, and you know, let me know with your results with it. Just keep at it.
Yeah, and for now, I only have two person. They tell me they don't have, you know, they don't have. Oh my god, they don't need to sell it now.
Yeah,
for now. So I've told them if they change of mind, so keep them in mind. And maybe I have the guy they want to talk to. So they say yes. So that's only two. Most of them, they didn't answer or they don't want to sell. Well, I'm gonna start to getting, you know, comfortable to the no. So
I got it. Okay, bud. Let me know how it works out. Let me get some other people on here, and I love your effort. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you, man. You're driving a car, I can tell, right?
The van, the big van. But so I had a quick question.
Okay.
When it comes to posting the digital bandit sign, what category do we post it in? That's what I was confused about. Is it like for sale or is it like buying?
So are you talking on Craigslist?
Yeah.
Boy, Craigslist, that's, you could do for sale or you could also do services for real estate. I usually go between both of them. Every now and then they get pissed off when you do one or the other, but, sometimes when I stick in like the for sales, they all get flagged, but then when I go over services, they don't get flagged. So you just got to keep swapping them depending on what market you're in and how aggressive the moderator is for that day. But typically those two, sometimes I've done the miscellaneous category, but like you get some, like it, I've never got a lot of great traction off it. It doesn't get flagged in miscellaneous, but the wrong people see it. So you get like some freaks that call you off of that one. So just rotate it between the services and for sale. And that's really the only way you can do it on Craigslist.
Okay. That's what I wanted to make sure. I was having a...
Yeah, you got it. What else you got?
That's it. I think the other question that I had, and the Flip Work Plus, I can go ahead and post pictures and get like more specific details as far as like the property that I'm looking at, right?
Okay, buddy. I appreciate it. Okay. So, Ben, you there?
Yeah.
What's going on?
Hey, I'm coming back from a seller's appointment with the seller right now.
So tell us about it.
Yeah, so I mean, it went pretty good. I didn't get signed contract, unfortunately. But I just had a question because, like, it went good. Like, I built pretty good rapport with the sellers. It was a probate situation, and I mean, like, seemed like we're getting along pretty good. But the house hadn't been updated in 50 years.
Wow.
Pretty bad shape, and like they knew it, and they knew it was in bad shape, but when it got the price, like I wasn't able to leverage that very effectively and to bring them down on price. And it kind of seemed like they're sort of delusional. And, you know, that's why I wasn't able to deal really.
So what price did they spit out to you?
So, they said they got an appraisal that was around 240, and they also had some realtors come around and say that they could sell it for 240. So, I mean, in their head, that's what, you know, that's what they thought they could get it for. But
so what do you think it's worth?
My MAO was 180.
Yeah.
I did the good cop, bad cop. I offered 150 at first. And of course, I stopped at it. And then I tried to go up to 165 and they scoffed at that too. And I was just like, all right, you guys are just.
So when they say scuff, were they like laughing at you or what were they doing?
They're just like, oh, no, no way, no way. And like,
yeah,
it just seemed like it really wasn't like maybe just delusional or maybe I just didn't like hammer home the condition of the property enough. I couldn't really tell. But
so listen, the property's motivated, just your sellers aren't. And I would have gone to the appointment too, because you always have a shot with it. But the damn thing hasn't been updated in 50 years. I promise you, when they put it on the market, the market's going to shame them for it.
Right.
And number two, I love when a realtor says, oh, I can sell it for like 240. I always say, listen, at the end of the day, how much do you want to take home? Because what a realtor lists it for and what goes in their pocket on a probate, it's usually complete night and day.
Yeah.
So you're talking about net numbers to them. They're talking about gross numbers. And a lot of times, like when I get pinched, when I used to be younger on the probates, this exact one, they're going to know that the realtor said they could list it up to like 255. I'm like, I would look around. I go, I tell you what, here's what I would do. If that realtor says they can get you 255, list it for 255, give them a 30-day agreement and tell them it's 255 or the highway. You know why? Because it's never going to sell for 255. And they're going to get pissed off after 30 days on the market and the realtor is going to look like an idiot. I don't really do that anymore because, listen, the bottom line is they're just not motivated. So right. It's all about money and like there's nothing you can do about those. But you had the right property, they're just not motivated. Now, I would put them in a follow-up because most likely they're going to put it on the market and it's going to suffer on the market. It's going to be on 3 months with multiple price reductions. And that's sometimes when you can just backdoor the seller and go, listen, remember when we met and I told you, like, are you open to having a conversation with me at that point? Because at that point, I just ignore the realtors because they're just taking the listing. They know they're going to drop the price eventually. And then the seller's going to get paid, that the realtors are going to get their money. But listen, it happens all the time to us. Like, don't like lose sleep over it. Like, you had the right property. They're just crazy. And honestly, a lot of times when you get multiple owners on probates, one will be extremely reasonable and one will be irrational. It's hard. Yeah. And then you can't convince that other person. You have to get the person that's on your side to convince the other family member because you're never going to be able to do it. So I've waited up to 4 years for a property just like the one you're talking about. If you're telling me it's that outdated and they put it on the market, I always tell them, I go, either just fix it up.
Yeah.
Or keep the property. Like, you can't do, listen, when it comes to putting a property on the market, either take it all the way home or sell it as is. And I tell the seller, the worst thing you can do is get caught in the middle. Because if you put 20, 30 grand into it and put it on MLS, they're going to expect you to finish it and then you're going to be stuck. Yeah. And so think about what you want at the end of the day. But if they don't want a quick sale and they don't want it super convenient, don't lose sleep about it, dude. It happens to me all the time. Right. It's okay. You give it a shot and hopefully there's some reasoning with it, but put it on a follow-up list because I think they're going to wind up probably listing that on the market.
Yeah.
And
just wait till it expires or something.
Yeah. So here's the only thing I do on probates. I always tell them, I go, listen, if you want to list it, that's fine. Take a swing at it. Mm-hmm. But remember, you might not like the feedback you get because once you put it on the market, so say they put it on the market at 240 and nobody wants any of it, that means they're way off.
Yeah.
And now you have proof in the pudding. But by the way, also, when someone says they got an appraisal, you're usually not in a good position, just so you know. You know what an appraisal is, right?
Well, it's for a mortgage. So
it's just a permission slip.
Yeah.
It means nothing.
Yeah.
The only, you know why I know appraisals are complete crap? Because they just want to make sure someone's being responsible to the bank that's giving out the loan. But the reality is most appraisers, almost every one of them come within 5 to 10% of the sales price. And you know what every appraisal has with it? They have a copy of the contract. My friends are appraisers. They tell me, they go, we just look at the contract price. And if we go in and there's nothing crazy in the house, whatever the contract price is what the appraisal price is.
Okay.
It's terrible.
Right. Yeah.
It's absolutely terrible. So when you hear the word appraisal, or like once they start talking realtor, sometimes I'll just switch. I go, listen, if you want to list it, here's what I do. I would get the whole thing fixed up. You'd probably get done for like $100,000 and put it on the market and take the first offer that comes by in 30 days.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, really? You think that's a good idea? I'm like, but one thing, they go, well, I don't have $100,000 to fix it up. I go, okay, well then put it on the market at 240 and don't negotiate and tell the realtor that they got 30 days. In any negotiation, tell the realtor it's got to come out of their commission.
Right.
And realtors get ticked when I say that, but it's irresponsible realtors to say they're going to sell for that. They know it's never going to sell for that price.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and I also say, hey, listen, do you want to sell it? Do you want to list it or do you want to sell it?
Mm-hmm.
And so the only thing you can do right there is basically, Ben, is try to listen to their backstory when they first call you. And sometimes if it doesn't match up to what they told you originally, like, listen, we just want to sell it as is. I like the word fair price, but like when they start talking about like unrealistic prices and laughing at you, just move on. Nothing's going to happen with it. And then just see if it's on the market after 30 days, then reach out to the seller. And all of a sudden, And here's how, here's your comeback to him. I was the guy that told you the truth.
Right. Yeah.
So I told you all that stuff would go on. Let's focus on what we can get you in your pocket right now if you still want to move forward. And if they don't, just let the market do its damage and go from there. I've actually bought properties like this, have them still in the market for a year. And then I go through my own realty company, which is my wife's. And then I get the 6% commission back and I get a deep discount because they're so stupid how they listed the property. And I love doing that too, but those are like freak deals. And it takes a really dumb seller and a dumb realtor to take advantage of that situation. So, but there's nothing to do, Ben. You did exactly what I would do. So like just move past it, put them in your follow-up. That is what it is.
Okay.
So you got an experience to meet with the seller. The property is motivated. The sellers aren't. So all you can do is let time and circumstance change for them in the long run.
Yeah.
So the market's brutal, these people, man. They're brutal. They're like, are you going to fix it up? What are you going to, and everybody's going to come in with a low ball offer.
Right.
So, and then you can even submit a low ball offer and stick a realtor on there, but I would just wait. So it's frustrating, but you try to snuff them out. So always look at the story of what the seller wants to accomplish. Everybody wants to get rid of property fast. And if you just key on that, it's not going to help you. Listen to the words they say. So if they say appraisal and stuff like that up front, it's like, oh, Lord.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry. Were you getting a bank loan on it? I didn't understand that. So,
right.
So don't worry about it, man. Just go out and find another motivated seller and watch. That property will be around in the fall by for sure.
Yeah, probably.
So by the way, in our office, we have an electronic board with like 36 MLS properties that we contacted originally as a motivated seller. And then they went and listed with a realtor. And then I have one person in my company. That's all they do is chase that stuff down.
Okay.
And they get like one or two deals here and there. But it just show you how slim of odds they are to get them. It's that painful.
Oh, gosh.
But when you talk about not updating a property in 50 years, it's going to stick out like a sore thumb on the market.
Oh, yeah.
So, okay. Anything else, bud? Don't worry about it. Like, it happens.
Yeah.
All you can do is go up and you swing, dude. And if like you strike out, you just move on and go, okay, here we go. Yeah. You're going to strike out more than you hit a home run in this business.
Yeah.
Like, don't worry about it. Mm-hmm. The only time you really screw up is when you don't show up to these appointments because you assume they're not going to give you a good deal. So I would have shown up on that one. Now, if it wasn't a probate and they talking about appraisal and they were talking about listing with a realtor, I probably wouldn't go.
Yeah.
But when I hear probate 50 years outdated, I'm all in.
Right.
They weren't living in the property, were they?
I mean, not – so one of the brothers kind of lived there and he also lives with his girlfriend, but not really.
Yeah, you're good.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it, man. Shake it off. Just go find another one. They're not all like that, I promise you.
Right.
But when you find the right one, you'll know. You'll be there. You'll go through the exact same procedure you just went through. So.
Right. Yeah.
Okay?
Thank you.
Don't worry about it, Ben. You got it. Jason, what's going on, man?
Hey, Rick. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm trying to squeeze in a family vacation and still run all my businesses, but it's
I see that. And you're doing a live stream and you're starving too, man. I don't know how I would be able to.
No, I'm hungry. So I only eat like once a day. I do a fasting ritual. It's not for everybody, but it works out for me. So, you know, cause I'm kind of old. I don't need the calories like I used to. So you young people with kids and everything else, it's like, but,
sometimes I forget to eat. To be honest with you.
I do that too, but we eat way too much as humans to begin with. So like, the amount of crap with the 4th of July and everything else that went on there, my family vacation. So I promise you I'll eat good tonight, but like I make up for it because I like to have my fun stuff. And, I tell you, running on the beach sucks. I haven't done that in years. And now I know why.
Oh gosh. Yeah.
It hurts. My calves are just smoked, but it's, I like just getting out and like, I'm in an undisclosed area. It's hot as hell, man. It's like, it's beyond hot. It's like, I'm sweating this thing because I just want to get sunburned every time I go out.
That's my problem. I can't go outside because I get sunburned.
My son laughs at me when he goes out. He's like, so now I wear the buff. So I do a lot of fishing. So that's what I was out doing this morning. I pull the buff up to the eyeglasses and then I wear a neck band. And now I got the shirts. This one doesn't have it. It's got the built-in hoodie on it.
Uh-huh.
Because I've had the dermatologist slicing too much crap off. See, because you got to understand, when I was a kid, I never wore a shirt. Like a shirt was a luxury item when I was growing up in Florida. Wow. So like I used to get blisters. Like we didn't know any better back then. Our parents didn't.
That's how I was. That's how I was too. I always stay in the sun, and now I'm like, I don't want to be in the sun. Keep me out.
I know, sunspot. So here's the next one is, like, they start to have the shirts and they have the covers that go over your, because this spot gets a lot of sun. I'm getting old now. And the thing is, my son did it opposite. He's like white and pasty the way you're supposed to be.
Yeah.
So every time we do a live, he goes like, you're so dark on the live. I go, dude, I fish. You know how this works. No matter what, there's a certain amount where you're just kind of exposed to UV rays and there's nothing you can do about it.
Right. After a long time, that's what happens. Anyways, I got a quick question. I know you're ready to go. So I'm going to look at a probate deal this weekend. I'm going to look at it. And so I wanted to just kind of prepare myself for writing a contract. So it's still in probate, but I didn't know with the contract, as far as closing, does the closing have to align with when the probate closes or just finishes? No. Or can I just do a regular deal and it could go through while it's in probate?
So is it is the probate freshly filed or is it old or do you know?
It's about 6 months old.
So here's what I would do. And everybody's got to hear this tip. When you have a probate, it's undetermined. So I've already told you most probates you can actually get the house sold before the probate's complete.
Okay.
You can't do that until you get a contract first. And then the thing is, you don't know which option you're going to take. If things go really well, you can close it in 30 days. If the lawyer's difficult and convinces your seller to wait till the probate's done, then you have to wait. So you're going to put close on or before 12/31/23. Why? Because you don't need to go back and get an extension every month. Now go just tell yourself, I'm going to put it way back there, but we're going to try to get this done sooner than later. The problem is if you put 30 days, it's going to keep expiring and it's not your seller's fault and it's a pain in the ass for you. And so you want to keep them on the hook. Now, when you put towards the end of the year, it doesn't mean ignore your seller. You got to touch base with them every week, then every other 2 weeks, and then at most every 30 days because they will lose sight of you if you forget about it. So you don't know what the date is. I've put on there up to a year. And then what you can do is write on there, seller, buyer has right to do final inspection prior to closing, which means if you had to wait, say you had to wait a year or two and say the property is in rough shape, then you have the ability to get out of that contract too or renegotiate it. But is it a decent property or is it like a piece of junk or?
No, it's a decent property. It needs some floor work, but otherwise it's decent. So I'm looking now.
Yeah, put it towards the end of the year because that gives you at least 5 months.
Yeah, and then if it's you May. One extension. I'm looking now. It's May 1st. The probate was filed. So May, June, July. So like 3 months actually.
And remember, once you have the contract, Jason, once you have the contract and you're not leveraged by a lawyer, then you can talk to your title company and you can basically instruct them to tell your seller on what paperwork their lawyer needs to file to get the property sold. Most lawyers tell them you have to wait till the probate's complete. If they really want to sell it and they're not living in the house and they want to get rid of it, they have to enter into a motion. Every state's different how they do it. So the title company will tell the seller what motion to have the attorney file. You have nothing to do with it. You can't really do that because you're not practicing law.
Right.
Some lawyers will fight you on it and some will go, okay, I'll do it. I just give up. I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah. I know that they want to get rid of it because there's a mortgage they're still paying every month. So I know that the owners will probably push for it, the PR.
So put the end of the year on it and just put on or before and explain that to your seller so I don't have to chase you around for the paperwork. Yeah. But we're going to be in contact at least every 2 weeks until we get this done. And if something changes, you get it done faster. I might have and then I use it as dangle carrot. If you sign this contract with me, I might have a way for you to actually sell it before the probate's complete. But I got to get the paperwork over to the title company and use it as leverage with them. Okay?
Yeah. Gotcha. That makes sense. Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad that I asked you this because I would have put like a month or two. So I appreciate it, Rick.
Okay.
Thank you, man. Okay, enjoy your vacation.
I will, man. Okay, guys. That is it. So you are on the Flip with Rick. I'm sorry, you're on the Rick Inn YouTube channel. Guys, if you got value from this, do me a favor. Make sure you're subscribed to this channel. It makes a difference. And you get special content nobody else gets to see on the Flip with Rick channel. And if you like this, check out my son's channel on Zach Ginn. We'll be live all this week. You know, we never miss work. So we actually enjoy doing this. So I will see you through the week, maybe some different locations. God only knows where internet works. And as usual, if you got value from this, make sure you smash that like button. Make sure you subscribed. And this is Rick Ginn. And guys, I will see you shortly. See you guys later.